Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, aka Wozny Lambre, joined as always by my brothers, my comrades, Nando Vila, out in sunny Santa Monica, California, man, catching waves, catching rays.
That's me.
You know what I mean? Eating, drinking kombucha. He's doing everything. And of course, Of course, my brother Michael Jamal Brooks on the planet of Brooklyn. What's going on, y'all?
Not much, man. Hanging in there.
Good. On today's show, we're going to talk about Biden somehow extending his lead in the polls in the presidential race by literally doing nothing. What that might mean for the race for 2020. Gonna get into the shenanigans going down in the state of Kentucky with that Senate race. At this point, they're not even hiding it. They're just doing it in plain sight and daring somebody, anybody, to do something about it. But first, man, we had a nice commie wave in the state of New York. Primary wins by Jamal Bowman and Mondaire Jones in New York's 16th and 17th districts. In the case of Jamal Bowman, who we highlighted here last week.
Yeah.
We helped him win. I actually sent some bread to the Bowman campaign, inspired by my discussion with you two brothers. So I get to take a little bit of credit for this too, Nando. I put some money where my mouth was and donated to the Bowman campaign. But yeah, man, he won in a landslide victory against an entrenched incumbent. And it's incredible. Of course, AOC comes out victorious once again. I think the AOC thing, I get a bit of satisfaction from. Obviously, it goes without saying the three of us love AOC. She stands for pretty much all of the things that we care about: working people, poor people issues, you know, trying to make America even some semblance of fair. But what I like is the small victories of, you know, whenever AOC is out and she's stumping for the causes that we do, or whenever she's bucking against the Democratic Party's establishment, there's always this condescending, like, oh, you barely won your little race in New York and it was really close and you need to stop acting like you're leading some kind of revolution. Like, get the hell out of here. You want to do things. We just want to be Democrats. And so the condescension that she draws from so many of the establishment people about, oh, it was fluky, oh, it was lucky, oh, it was this, oh, it was that. And then by virtue of the actual work she put in, her constituents rewarded her with a landslide victory of like, yo, it's like straight up, keep doing that shit that you're doing. It's not a fluke that we elected you. It's not because you got lucky. You're doing the work that we elected you to do. And so I think the victory just speaks volumes to that. And those idiots can't talk the way that they like to talk. And so I got a special gratification. And, you know, in these times, guys, it's the little victories at this point that we got to hold on to and be happy with. And so I got a special bit of gratification from that. Nando, what did you take from New York?
Well, I mean, you mentioned the AOC victory. She beat a woman named Michelle Caruso Cabrera, who was a TV anchor. She was like a CNBC host who like covered, you know, Wall Street and was married to a like hedge fund millionaire guy. She was a registered Republican up until like 2 seconds ago. And there was like some rumblings going on in establishment liberal circles that were like, you know, AOC, she's not releasing her internal polling in this race. You know, it could be much closer than anyone cares to admit. Michelle Caruso Cabrera, she's a Latina too, and she's on TV, so she's charismatic. And, you know, that's the only reason why people like AOC, because she's a hot Latina who's charismatic. They don't, you know, like, and she just absolutely crushed her. So that was, you know, obviously very, very gratifying. But, you know, the Jamal Bowman race seems like a really big deal. I mean, we talked about it last week. But right now, I mean, they just took down the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, like one of the most powerful people in the government. I mean, it's just at the end of the day. So that's a really, really big deal. And then Jabari Brisport, who's a very, very good socialist, won a state Senate primary. He yes, follows me on Twitter and retweets me every once in a while, so that makes him doubly good. Probably why yes, he
sir.
Won.
Yes, yeah. sir.
So yeah, I mean, like, listen, it's been awful, especially in the wake of Bernie's defeat. The ruling class really established itself as the ruling class in the Bernie race, and there was this feeling that of hopelessness that I felt every once in a while. And, you know, last night really gave us a little bit of a shot of adrenaline. And it was like, you know what, there are little victories to be had here and there. And, you know, AOC herself proved that, you know, one big victory can be a big sea change in some ways. And, you know, we've seen the damage that AOC, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib have done. You know, that's three people. If we have 10, 20, we start having 30, 40 people, you know, like, then we can do some real damage. So, you know, it was definitely progress, and it was definitely nice to see the establishment hacks like Tom Watson, who we talked about, just absolutely eat shit. So that was great.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a really good night. And also there was a primary in Virginia, that I don't have, I wish I should have had it in front of me, but basically, left wing doctor of, I think, South Asian descent, ran in an insurgency, took that primary. Jamal Bowman is really, I mean, he definitely just has, you know, he's a very, he's just an appealing candidate. He'll definitely bring, obviously, something extremely different than Elliot Engel to Congress. I think, like, not to be in any way like a downer, I just think that we need to, like, you know, keep a little bit in check that, you know, the truth was that several months ago we were actually working to elect a truly transformative president. And, you know, look, it's proven, definitely, it seems increasingly so, that there's room to take off these old hacks in New York and replace them with infinitely better people like AOC and Jamal Bowman. Is that going to start getting replicated across the country is the big question. That's also why we will get to Kentucky, where the Booker race has been really inspiring. And, you know, there's still some out there, like, less of a media market. He's a less exciting candidate, but Andrew Romanoff is definitely significantly better than Hickenlooper. That's like another pretty strong contrast.
Endorsed by Elizabeth Warren.
Endorsed by Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah,
riding to the rescue of the
pro fracking, the guy who drank fracking on live TV.
Drank fracking for healthcare, Hickenlooper. The only one I want to say is, I mean, I actually, you know, there was some good candidates like Isaiah James, who definitely, you know, was running a really uphill battle, but I think was a great candidate. I liked Lauren Ashcroft as well. There was some others who came up short. Julia Salazar is also back in the state Senate. She's been doing really, really good work. So that's also good news, along with Jabari. The one actually, and I think it's New York's, I want to say ninth maybe, but honestly, I'm not sure. But Richie Torres, you know, made history as a young, openly gay man. He's on the New York City Council. I think this is there are races where the politics and policy and representation are synchronized, like Bowman. I think in Torres's case, that's actually a step down. Jose Serrano.
Talk about that to the people.
Yeah, so Jose Serrano represented that district. He's of Puerto Rican descent. He's in his late 70s and unfortunately has Parkinson's disease, which is why he declined to run again. I mean, that's a very horrible disease, as people know. And if you look at his record, I mean, this was a guy who fought aggressively for the interests of his neighborhood, was very serious on a pro-poor, anti-poverty agenda, but also, like, invited Hugo Chavez to speak in his district when Chavez was at the UN, signed letters, in support of democracy in Brazil and around the Lula issue, and also was somebody who did a lot of work around political prisoners and other things related to Puerto Rico. So, you know, in a town with, like, a huge amount of machine politics, a huge amount of obviously real estate and Wall Street money, He really stood out. I mean, he was a really, really good congressperson. And there was a great candidate in Semelita. For some reason, I can just never.
Semeliz Lopez.
Semeliz Lopez. She was a really good candidate. She was the candidate we supported. Bernie and AOC did endorse her. She pulled up to about 13% in the poll, you know, in the final vote tally. Data for Progress, which I think was involved in Torres' campaign, you know, they put out a poll showing her at 2%. I don't really believe. And the other dynamic of that district was there was this paranoia that Diaz Sr., who was like this, you know, virulently anti-gay, anti-trans.
Pro-Trump.
Pro-Trump, but
yeah, never tried.
But machine, I mean, his son is the Bronx Borough president. So there's concern that he would come in. But, you know, I think I have to say, like, in Torres's case, looking at his overall record, I mean, this is not this is somebody, you know, watered down fake police reform, real estate money. I think that's kind of a downgrade policy wise. But obviously with Mondaire Jones and Jamal Bowman, those are some huge upgrades.
Mondaire Jones, also openly gay black man, going to be the first probably member of Congress, openly gay black man, him and Richie Torres both. So, yeah.
No, wow. So that's significant. Also, I think Mondaire Jones defeated a former prosecutor who I think spent like $4 million of his own money.
Yeah. So
that also, I mean, there's a lot of ways. I mean, there was
how does a prosecutor make that much money?
I think it's like People's Hernandez says in the Shaft remake of 1997, in edited.
Yeah, he's like Chuck Rhodes in Billions. Yeah. Yeah. You made it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, just wanted to talk about New York because we just wanted to circle back because of last week, and we spent so much time talking about the silliness of Hillary Clinton coming out and supporting the opponent of a Jamal Bowman. Like, it's just ridiculous, but guess what? They lost. They were defeated handily. Things are still ticking back in the right direction, even after, as Mike mentioned, you know, in the wake of Bernie's defeat to crazy Joe Biden. In Kentucky, Charles Booker is in a very close, hotly contested Senate race. And we wanted to talk about Kentucky because what they're doing down there, literally closing the polling stations in places that they know Booker is very popular in order to keep this, in order to win this race. And it becomes one of those things with voter suppression where it's not about, like, and I know the cynical view and how the right is always going to position it is that, well, you guys are only for it or against it because it favors the left. And it's just like, dude, it's voting. Yeah. Like, all you people talk about is American values and blah, 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 democracy and all this other crap is all we ever hear out of these fools' mouths. And this is like, I don't even know what's more central to the democracy than going out and voting. And they just blatantly, in plain sight, just do crazy shit. Just like straight up messed up stuff. And, you know, we're probably not going to get into the Roberts Court and their decision on the Shelby County case to basically strip the Voting Rights Act of any of its teeth, which if you don't know and you're listening at home, when LBJ passed this shit in the 1960s, part of the provisions was you states who have shown a history of targeting people, African-Americans, whatever, people who you don't like, with ridiculous voting rules and changes and all of that, you are now disallowed to make any, from making any changes to your voting rules.
You need
pre-clearance from the DOJ to do so. And it's targeted states, and it's straight up like, yo, you're not allowed to do this because of your history. Mm. Well, John Roberts, in his infinite wisdom, and my man Chuck Pierce calls it when John Roberts declared the Day of Jubilee, essentially, Southern states are no longer racist. They no longer, we don't need this shit anymore. They love black people. We don't need this.
One of the state, you know, there's a district I think in Queens too. Of course. Across the country.
Where people were doing shenanigans as far as, you know, alienating people from the franchise. And so that's why you're able. And the second this freaking Supreme Court ruling went down, states, and it wasn't, and I shouldn't say just southern states. You saw it in Wisconsin. You saw it in North Carolina. You saw it all over the place. Republican state legislators was like, let's go. Let's get to it. And that's what they've done. And guess what? It's borne fruit for them. Yeah. They've won statewide races and been able to jerry-rig situations for them to maintain power all over the country. And what you're seeing in Kentucky is no different. But, you know, Charles Booker still holding his own in a really close race.
Yeah, so in Kentucky, like what they did is they basically shut down tons of polling stations. Like Louisville, which is the biggest city in Kentucky, is a city of 600,000 people, had one polling place.
Wow.
For the whole city. And, you know, some of these polling places, like, you know, closed early. And then the Booker campaign filed an injunction. People were like, there's videos of people literally slamming on the windows trying to get into the polling place. And they filed an injunction. A judge granted it. They have to open till 9 p.m. Then they opened it for a little bit. They tried to close it early again, like all kinds of, like you said, shenanigans. And that state is that race is really interesting because so it's Mitch McConnell's state, right? He's the Senate Majority Leader, probably the most powerful Republican outside of Trump in the country. One of the most powerful politicians.
Son of the Confederacy, Mitch McConnell.
Son of the Confederacy. One of the most consequential politicians in American history. Probably, certainly of the last 30, 40 years.
I mean, who's even like a non-president? Who can you even point to?
Like Henry Clay?
Like, seriously, that's been this influential when you talk about the court packing and the deregulation stuff and the tax cuts. Like, he has been definitional to Republican politics for the last 20 years.
Yeah. So that state's interesting, right? Because, I mean, obviously, if Democrats can somehow knock him out, I mean, that would be a political earthquake unlike we've seen almost ever. And, of course, the Democrats, like, run these kind of very soft, you know, moderate types. They got behind this woman, Amy McGrath, the whole establishment. And, you know, she's whatever. She's just kind of like your standard Dem, nothing to write home about. And, you know, they did all they could to crush this guy, Matt Jones, who is a sports radio host in Kentucky. You know, the most popular sports radio host in the state, actually. So, like, he would have had like a big chance of winning. But then they essentially ended up like kind of forcing him out of the race by doing all kinds of dirty tricks. But then this guy, Charlie Booker, came out of nowhere. Charles Booker and his campaign really took off after the George Floyd protests kind of swept the country, especially, you know, in Kentucky, where it was where Breonna Taylor was murdered. So he like put himself firmly in the protest camp, whereas like Amy McGrath like didn't go to the protests. And, you know, she's like not aligning herself with that. And it looks like he might have won the Senate primary, the Democratic primary. I mean, we're not going to know for a few days exactly, but, you know, she had the lead in early vote totals. But there are sources that claim that in certain urban districts, Booker has just like a massive lead. And until they get those counted, we won't know. But it looks like he might have won. And then if he does manage to pull out the victory, that race in November, Booker versus McConnell, like, man, that is like the race right now. Like, that would be
that would be the epicenter. I mean, that's going to be like the clearest good versus evil. I mean, that's everything in, you know, like an architect of, as you said, I mean, of court packing, of reversing gains in voting rights, civil rights. And I mean,
like, what hasn't Mitch McConnell done that's pure evil?
He's a grave digger of democracy.
Yeah, I mean, he really is.
I really, what's interesting is, like, again, obviously Trump has authoritarian tendencies. I actually would say, and I recommend everybody read this book called Democracy in Chains by Nancy McLean about like the intellectual history of libertarianism and the Republican Party. It's all anti-democratic to the core.
Yeah.
But a lot of the kind of like specific rhetoric which people reserve for Trump could honestly be, I mean, just accurately deployed at Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is an enemy of open democratic government in every way, shape, or form, and just a bag man for every, you know, corporate interest imaginable. And he's also struck this amazing balance politically where, you know, across the rest of the country, he's you know, slashing the social safety net, giving money to rich people. And then he's bringing the bacon.
He always gets it back to Kentucky.
He's master of that. And yeah. And so Charlie, and I want to say too, like Amy McGrath, yeah, like she is like a conventional Democrat in the sense that like most Democrats, you know, suck, but
sorry.
It's true.
Just couldn't help herself, folks.
But he's really like, you know, Trump is popular in Kentucky. So right. When she announced, I think she was on Morning Joe. I mean, one of the first things she did, and I mean, she tried to be like cute about it because she kind of was like, she was trying to sort of like hit McConnell for being pro-corporate. But she said it basically being like, you know, like Donald Trump's trying to do these things for workers and Mitch McConnell isn't helping them. And, you know, like I'm a Democrat, but I'll be there to help Donald Trump. So like just the idea Jesus that Christ. And just like all these other, you know, like. I mean, across the country, but just especially in any kind of southern state, the idea that you're going to be the standard bearer of a party that, you know, again, at its base is working black people and your fucking announcement day, you talk about collaborating with like the primary enemy of black people, like fuck you.
It's so tone deaf.
Watching Charlie Brooker's campaign, you know, and it's always these things. Like I've just gotten more, you know, it's like I've seen it take off on social media. We follow each other, like all these other candidates and I do, and whatever, and it's great. But you don't really know, you know, until the voting happens, and it looks like. This was real. It was not just the social media phenomenon. It's really inspiring. And it also shows like voter repression is at the center. And by the way, it's not just Republicans, right? I mean, because in this, I mean, it is mostly structurally Republicans, but in this case, clearly there's an issue inside the Democratic Party where this wouldn't be happening.
100%. And, you know, just to get back to what you were talking about, when it comes to sucky ass Dems and their insistence on like the idea that these people are still thirsty for bipartisanship. Like who does that play to? Does that really play to anyone with half a freaking brain? Like who are you playing to? It's almost like the Republicans are like the jocks in high school. Like they're the winners. And the Dems want nothing but to desperately be like them and just get their approval and just get them to work with us in this. And it's just like, it's freaking, I don't even know how to describe it, man. It's just like a syndrome at this point that you would get up on Morning Joe. But you know what, Mike? I should take that back. Morning Joe. If you're going to do that shit anywhere, Morning Joe is if you're watching Morning Joe, that you know you what? Suck. That's probably the place that you need to do that. Do that at. And, you know, speaking of Morning Joe and, you know, we're moving on from Kentucky. Joe Biden has extended his lead in the polls. He's killing this dude. Like it's just getting worse. Yeah. It's getting worse and worse by the day. And you know, in our pre-production little discussion, guys, I asked you, I'm like, what is there any updates out of Biden world? Cause like I feel like I haven't really heard anything. Like, and you guys are like, no, he's not doing anything. He's literally just letting this guy president. Just go ahead. Do all the presidenting that you can, and you just make us look all the more appealing day by day by day. And it's kind of crazy to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing polls. I mean, I think I saw him up 7 points in Florida in a late poll.
Seems
like
insane.
I was like, that's insane to me. You know, and I think it, You know, sometimes the conventional wisdom is correct, and that right. is like, you know, as the economy goes, so does the president's prospects. And we're seeing the largest economic collapse in probably 100 years. So it's no surprise that the president would take a hit in his popularity as a result, you know, regardless of whether who's to blame or what's to blame. You know, the president at the time always just gets blamed for economic hardship. So, you know, we are seeing this, and it's bearing out in the polls. And also not just that, but just the sense of upheaval. It's not just an economic slump, which there undoubtedly is, but it's this sense of chaos and upheaval, you know, which often tends to hurt the incumbent. You know, it's like Mike says it all the time. Like the thing that American voters crave above everything else at a certain point is normalcy, you know, a sense of normalcy. And, you know, like I think people had kind of adjusted themselves to the constant hum of Trump, you know, like say like 2018 Trump, 2019 Trump, like, you know, the insane things on Twitter and, you know, the insane press conference, and people had kind of accepted that. And maybe that felt like a new normal. But the things that we've seen in the last couple months, especially with coronavirus and the uprisings on the street, that does not feel normal at all to people. So Biden is, like you said, he's just fucking staying on the sidelines, just letting him burn himself. It's kind of remarkable. I've never seen anything like it. A presidential candidate dominating by not doing anything. It just really is, like, it's like that line in Dodgeball, you know, bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it works out for him, but it looks like it's actually working out for him.
Dodgeball's such a great movie.
Yeah, it's so underrated.
Such a great movie. But I think, I think that's always the message I hit, because I think that, you know, a lot of people on different parts of the left need to have a sense of it as well, which is just like most people, for better and for worse, I think in some ways for better, you know, in certain ways, and for definitely obviously for worse in many. Yeah, they just want things to like calm down.
Yeah.
Yep.
Want, like, you know, and so I think with Trump too, it's like you can't run on imposing order when you're presiding disorder.
Right.
Also, the other thing too is he's really not, like, I'm not saying that this would save him, but it's very interesting watching him now versus in 2016. So he's still funny. Like, he's still do like a good stand-up riff, but none of it is as, like, the stuff he did with like Marco Rubio, like,
oh, perfect.
Like, we're talking about stuff that was genuinely like
hilarious,
bursting. Like, this is the funniest stuff in culture, and especially, like, you know, I think there was just so much like sense among certain people that like this is all bullshit. Like, might as well have an entertainment product.
Yeah.
The other two things that happened is, like, he definitely, I think, was seen more and more, especially contrasted with today. He really did do some of the fake economic populism in 2016. He was talking about trade deals. He was talking about, and right now it's like he is 100% in a crazy right-wing bubble. So, like, when he first ran, he was like, all right, like, I'm a racist asshole, and I know that people want to hear that shit in the Republican primary. Boom, got you. But I also know that a lot of people resent the elites and income distribution and all this stuff.
He talked about the wars.
Bannon.
He talked about the wars.
I don't want to give him too much credit, but he had Bannon.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it is partially Bannon, but it's also like, and again, it's funny because, like, a part of me is like, well, Trump can't talk all that shit because he's been president as just the standard issue Republican for 3 years. But the truth is, like, that doesn't matter. He lies all the time anyways. Right. I really think his instincts are just not what they were. Yeah, and, you know, he's in the loser position. Like, it's so funny to watching them, like, spin, like, oh, why is Biden afraid to debate? And it's like, you know, we were saying on TMBS, it's like, well, because debating's for nerds. Fuck you. Like, that's what's great. Like Biden... Bernie would have been beautiful, but it's like he can't get a toehold on Bernie because Bernie's just focused on the issues. In a weird way, you can't get a toehold on Biden either because Biden's just like, yeah, whatever, champ. Like,
come on, Jack.
Yeah, come on. I'm in a fucking basement. I can't even stream right. I'm still kicking your ass. Like, think it's going to work out. What day is it?
You know what's interesting? I haven't thought about that. Is his posture is different because he's on defense now.
Yeah. Yep.
Whereas he was an underdog, was supposed to lose. His campaign was seen, and even he saw his campaign as mostly a joke when he started it. And so it was like, I can do or say anything. But now that you've, you know, sort of accrued this power and you feel like you have to hold on to shit, like you don't look as sturdy, right? Like you're grabbing at stuff, you're reaching at straws. And then, you know, a lot of the stuff that drove 2016 was, remember the crowds. He loved talking about his crowds. Like that was what drove, it was like, every time I say some crazy shit, they go crazy. I just need to come up with more crazy stuff. And again, you mix that in, Mike, like you said, with the populist stuff. And we don't need to get into whether it was genuine or not. He was talking about NAFTA. He was talking about the elites in the Republican Party. He was talking about the corruption of both sides. He knows because he was rich and corrupted them. He was doing all of that stuff. And now as an incumbent, because he was, his plan, obviously, because the economy was going in one direction the whole fucking presidency, his plan was literally just to be like, all I did was make this the greatest economy in the history of humankind. Like, that's what he was going to run on. Nothing else. It wasn't going to be about the wall. It wasn't going to be about this. It was like, I have made the most prosperous America in the history of life, and you need to give me 4 more years to keep doing it. And accidental events, man, like freak events have conspired against it and are just destroying this. It's destruction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't want to. I'm not going to like call the race right now. Or
no,
anything like that.
No. We've done enough because race calling known, on this show.
Yeah, we know that this shit can change very quickly,
and
we are living in very convoluted times, very unpredictable times. We don't know what the fuck's going to happen.
I'm whatever. I can end up making an embarrassment of myself here, but I don't think he gets a second term. I really don't.
I'm with you. I mean, the only doubt that I have is that at some point Biden's going to have to campaign on some level. Like, he can't stay out of it the whole time. You know, like at some point the media is going to start focusing in a lot more, you know, as we get closer to November. And at some point, you know, and Biden, when he does actually campaign, just usually trends downward. You know, like, it's people like the idea of Biden, but when they're confronted with him directly, they're usually like, oh no, he's not as good as I thought he was.
The thing is, I saw that the new New York Times poll, Siena poll, that has Biden up by double digits. It's like Biden's approve disapprove is like 26-27. Like, it's split, it's like crazy. 26% of people.
It's crazy.
But Trump's is 27-50-something.
Yeah, right. He's underwater.
He's underwater.
Hate him. Like, he and that, to me, like, that was the most.
That's what killed Hillary.
That was the number with Hillary. That told the whole story. It was like, the people who dislike both of them voted for Trump. And in this case, people who dislike both of them are going for Biden. I don't know, man. I just don't, because to me, it's like the events are way ahead of him and he doesn't have the strategic capacity to and even like with Biden, it's like, so Biden's going to go out and campaign. And like, compared to what? You know what I mean? Like, Biden's going to go out and be like, yay, he seems a little senile, versus like, this guy is just like, I actually invented Starship Troopers, and I never got credit.
That wouldn't be a bad campaign slogan.
And so before we just move on from this, I would like to get your thoughts on, like, what is the strategy for Biden going forward? Nothing. Is it literally just more silence?
Let him hang himself. That's it. I mean, that's it. You know, it's do as few events as possible. When you do them, make them like incredibly controlled and managed and short. Right. And just let him hang himself. That's the only I mean, and he shouldn't do. I mean, that would be the wisest strategy. Like, do not do anything, Joe Biden. That would be the best. When he does try to do something, he usually fucks it up.
Yeah, because Trump is so clearly floundering right now. The stuff where he had to explain to the crowd about him being scared to walk down the steps. And I was just like, what is this dude doing? Like, that's just not... That's not the Trump brand, showing vulnerabilities, letting them see you sweat.
The water like, cup was the first.
Right, like the water. Like, it's just, he seems to just be floundering. And that shit in Tulsa where it was just basically an empty crowd of people.
That was very not good for him.
Not good. And, you know, the problem was that... You backed it like you canceled the event or moved it or whatever. And so you signaled to the people, yo, we're kind of doing something nasty right now. And I think that's why people didn't show up. Yeah. If he would have did his normal Trump bluster, like, what are these people talking about? Typical libtards going overboard and making a stink over nothing. I think it would have been different. But he openly admitted, like, sheesh, like, these are pretty messed up optics. And that signal got to his people and people didn't show up. And, of course, he's just like, wow, my thing is getting crowds to come see, you know, the bearded lady, the circus act. And he can't even do that now. He is just... in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, I think the coronavirus thing also definitely, you know, is going to hurt him in terms of the crowd standpoint. I mean, I think people, you know, there's some idiots who are like, fuck it, I'm going to go. But I think, you know, even like tons of like his Republican base are still pretty freaked out about the coronavirus.
And they skew older, so they should be freaked out.
Yeah.
That was interesting, right? Because I mean, there's clearly a lot of people who are saying it's a conspiracy and not wearing masks and freedom and blah, 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 blah. But at least so far, there has not been a critical enough mass of people to actually say, we're going to go to this rally and beat the fucks.
Yeah.
And that is a problem. That's the problem.
Imagining a Joe Biden presidency is just funny. I mean, it's just, you know, it really is funny. Like it's hilarious. And, you know, the Trump presidency is one of the funniest things to ever happen to America, but the Joe Biden one is funny for very, very different reasons, you know, but it's still pretty funny.
It's like, there was like this string of Soviet leaders between Brezhnev and Gorbachev, which is they were just there for like 9 months.
Yeah, they just kept dying.
Yeah.
Chernenko and drop off. They just literally just kept on dropping dead.
Yeah.
And like wandering around the Kremlin, just like being like, where am I?
I don't have any optimism about it, but I mean, his VP pick is going to matter.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably going to be Kamala at this point.
I think it's going to be Kamala. Dude, guys. What the fuck is up with her, man? She is like,
she's the
combination that she has. No, because I'm saying like she at times, and I know I've said like there are times where it's like, you know what? She seems
impressive. Right.
Like, cool. And then there's times like, you know what it is? You know what struck me about it is that it's weirdly like, did you guys see that thing on Colbert that she
had? Yeah, it was so weird.
It was, and you know what was, so she's on Colbert, and Colbert's like, you know, you flayed Biden pretty hard, and now, like, everything is great. Like, how does that work? And she just starts laughing. She's like, it was a debate.
Like, it doesn't matter what I say.
Like, oh, my God.
It was a debate. But you know what was funny to me about it was, like, what made it doubly weird, though, was, like, as phony as she is, she's, like, authentic enough to not get how fucking weird that looks to people. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, she didn't say, like, well, I sat down with Joe Biden and we had a heart to heart and I realized that. She's just like,
no, I was trying to score points at the debate. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't actually believe any of this shit.
And so there is like this part of her that's actually like very awkward, very stilted.
I think it's underrated is that black women really like her.
Today.
She didn't get nobody like, voted for her though.
Like, they like her on the internet, and so I think she's gonna get people to be advocates on her behalf amongst that cohort. And by black women, I mean like people my age and a little bit older who went to a freaking, who went to college, might have went to grad school, is in a sorority, you know, a fancy Negro type. They really dig her. Like, really, really dig her.
It would get, like, the woke, liberal kind of intelligentsia to be comfortable with, like, really going full-throated for Biden. You know, it's like, we're going to get a black woman in the White House.
Like the DeRay McKesson, McKesson types, man. They're going to be down. They're going to be, they're going to fall in line. They're going to get in line quickly. Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Those types.
Oh, yeah. In a way that they wouldn't with Klobuchar.
Hell no. No. They would
why was that even a fucking consideration?
It's crazy. it's crazy.
Strange shit. Imagine, like, you're out of the running because you didn't prosecute George Floyd's murderer. And in fact, didn't do a damn thing about police brutality and violence. As a matter of fact, went after and harassed the Somali community. So you're not going to be VP, and you go out on MSNBC and you're like, it should be a black woman.
I like
Jaden Warren, though. That was funny.
I think Kamala Harris, me and Nando had that conversation about liberals and what they like on here that day. She profiles perfectly for what they like. It's like, look, she's black, so she's with it, you know? And she understands authority, and, you know, she comes from institutions and blah, 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 blah. And she went to the schools, and, like, she profiles perfectly, like, the way she speaks, all of that shit. And she's from California. Like, they're going to eat that shit up. Which, whatever, you know, I'm not gonna wave any pom-poms over it, but, you know, life goes on, I guess.
I think Val Demings, being from Florida, and ironically the fact that she's literally a cop, keeps her
keeps her in the running.
I think it's probably Kamala, but
one knows who the fuck she is, you know?
Right.
Like, literally no one knows who she is. You know, Kamala at least has some sort of national profile. It'll probably be her. I've said it was from the beginning it was going to be her.
Yeah, I mean, it makes
sense. It was never going to be Warren because Biden fucking hates Warren.
Biden has days. Did you guys see the meme that after Klobuchar said it should be a woman of color, that
Elizabeth Warren is a Native American, she could get it?
Oh, God. That's not nice. That's not nice, y'all. That's not nice. That's fucking hilarious. And with that, we can bring today's show to a close, of course. Make sure you're becoming a Patreon of Count the Dings. That's patreon.com/countthedings for just extra content. Count the Dings After Dark, the Dad Pod, a variety of things that we do behind the paywall. And also helps put money behind bringing shows to you like Bomb, like The Woke Bros, like Cinephobe, and a variety of things that we do here at Count the Dings. Of course, make sure you become a Patreon of TMBS, The Michael Brooks Show. Those guys, Left Is Best, is just doing it. Every other day, I get a new follower with something to say, Left Is Best in a profile. That's how I know these brothers is leading a movement over there at TMBS. And of course, make sure you subscribe to Let's Pod It Out, Nando's Entourage Recap Pod. It's fantastic, it's funny, it's smart, it's sharp. Make sure you're paying attention to that. We'll be seeing you guys next week, man. Obviously, I'm Big Waz for Nando Vila and Michael Brooks. We out of here. Peace.